It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane alongside Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. As always, a big thank you to our friends. Presenting sponsor of the show, that is Exterior Home Solutions. For a free estimate, you can pick up the phone today and dial 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and East Tennessee's number one trusted source since 1999 for roofing, siding, windows, garage, whatever your need may be. Big week coming up, Tennessee in the college football playoffs, traveling to Ohio State this weekend. It's been a couple of off weeks, but now back into game week, and of course the transfer portal swirling, Tennessee basketball is happening right now. Let's start with the college football playoff matchup, and Brent, it's kind of been like, well, we've talked about Ohio State for a little bit, but now it's finally here, and it's a couple days away, and I think Tennessee's the players and obviously the coaches are full steam ahead to the Buckeyes and kind of getting back into that game week flow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good matchup, obviously. I mean, I think Miles Kitzelman said it the best. I mean, he's got playoff experience. You don't play bad teams during this time, and that's the case with Tennessee. And I know they're looking forward to the opportunity and the challenge that's ahead of them. And Austin, it's a real challenge. I mean, it's a good Ohio State team. I know the last visual everybody has of Ohio State is Michigan when they did not play well. But outside of that game, they played pretty well all season long. So there's a lot of challenges that they present. But as Dylan Sampson also said, there's some opportunities, particularly in the run game.
There are opportunities. And Ohio State's a really good football team, and they could easily be undefeated right now. I mean, you look at how they played on the road at Oregon. You look at the home loss to Michigan. Now, that's a head-scratcher as a three-touchdown favorite. But, I think that, for the most part, like, this is a team that's, could easily be undefeated. But they've also kind of barely won at Penn State, which, again, is a nice road win, right? That's a tough place to play. They gutted that one out. They struggled through a game against Nebraska. They've had moments where they've not been playing their best football. So I'm not sure they played their best football all year. Could that be against Tennessee on Saturday night? It sure could. This is a really well-rounded Ohio State football team. Defensively, obviously, they got all the accolades and stats to back them up. And offensively, they've got playmakers all over the field.
Rob, when you look at Ohio State, I mean, Tennessee, very, very similar teams in terms of they want to run the football. Tennessee's had more success in running the football, but they don't want to run the football. Defensively, they both do a great job of stopping the run. They're both really good on third downs. They're both really good in the red zone. Offensively for Ohio State in the red zone, very efficient, the best red zone scoring offense in the playoffs, whereas Tennessee's defense is really, really good in that regard. Tennessee's offense in that regard is 11th out of 12 playoff teams. But nonetheless, two pretty similar teams on paper. How is Tennessee going to try to attack Ohio State this weekend on the road, hostile environment in the college football playoffs?
Well, I mean, not to say anything that nobody else, I mean, probably a lot of other people are going to say, but I think it starts, with the run. I mean, the run defense, especially. And I think that plays into Tennessee's hands. I mean, Ohio State's been really good. They've got two dynamic tailbacks, without question, in Judson and Henderson. But, continuity issues on the offensive line. I'm not saying that, they don't have talent there, but, they've got some injuries. It's not an ideal situation for them. And just as good as Tennessee has been all year long, I mean, I would expect them to, hold Ohio State to 20 yards rushing, but I think Tennessee dictates that matchup. And I think that's, they've got to dictate that matchup to win. I mean, Ohio State has fantastic talent at wideout, but it's young. And, the quarterback is, I mean, he's a system guy. He's not a big time playmaker. And again, not rocket science. A lot of people are going to say it, but you put that offense in a lot of 36, third and sevens, third and eights. I mean, I think that's where you want to live if you're Tennessee and you feast on that.
I think defensively, obviously, it starts with stopping the run. And, that's something you just mentioned, Rob. But, getting Ohio State in third and mid with the injuries on the offensive line and something we've discussed this week, this has been a good week for Ohio State to kind of practice with the same five guys on the offensive line and try to figure out, what route they're going to go. We know about the Remington Award winner. He's not going to be playing. He's been out the last couple of weeks. Another starting offensive lineman's out. For Tim Banks in this defense, you got to feel like what an opportunity to put pressure on that offensive line, try to shut down the run game as much as you can, but really try to accelerate the clock for Will Howard to force some bad decisions like he did against Michigan. And you hope that opportunity is there with some banged up offensive linemen. If you're Tim Banks and Tennessee's defensive line and Rodney Gardner, you should be looking your chops right now.
Well, I think you got to win first down, as Rob said, and you said. I mean, I think when you look at this matchup, first down may be the biggest key in all of it for both sides of the ball. We don't, you know, we're all talking about how cold it's going to be. Nobody's talked about the wind. What's the wind factor going to be in this game, and how does that affect the game and the ability to throw the football in any way, shape, or form? And how do you, how do both these teams attack on early downs? Are you going to be really, really predictable with first down runs and get yourself behind the chains? Who's going to be creative with some different things in the run game? But yeah, I mean, if you get into third and long situations, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a chance for Tennessee's defensive front and Tim Banks and Rodney Garner's group to get really active. I think the same thing could be said on the other side of the ball. It's not like Tennessee has just been a wall up front in pass protection. They've given up a bunch of pressures too. Now, they didn't against Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt in the first half chose not to even try to pressure and pressured a little bit in the second half. But Tennessee, you know, blocked a Vanderbilt defensive front up, you know, well. I don't think that's a great Vanderbilt front. I think Ohio State's front's much better. So how do teams attack in early downs to avoid third and long, I think, is one of the intriguing parts of this matchup going into Saturday night.
Austin, certainly the calendar is unique right now, and you got players leaving via the transfer portal, your team recruiting players at the transfer portal, and we'll talk about that specifically here in a moment. But you know, Tennessee's lost some players, lost a running back, you know, lost a lot of reserves. Chaz Nimrod is in the transfer portal. Caleb Webb's in the transfer portal. Squirrel White's, you know, left Vanderbilt with a sling. You had Brew McCoy that didn't play that last game. Dante Thornton didn't finish that game. Health-wise at wide receiver, you know, Josh Hopple said on Monday that he thinks everybody's going to be ready to roll, but kind of where are they health-wise? And, you know, if Squirrel is not in the slot for, you know, a play or two, you know, who could we see Tennessee putting in that slot receiver position?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, they could go with, you know, obviously Braylon Staley. You know, they could slide somebody inside. If they're not going to do – if they're going to go with a more of a, you know, a, I guess, pragmatic and streamlined approach, you probably just see them go with more 12 personnel, you know, and go with two tight ends. And maybe they put Ethan Davis in the slot. You know, that's something they've done a whole lot this year of, is played, you know, two tight ends. And so – that probably makes the most sense versus going with, you know, an inexperienced player like Staley, who, even though Josh Heupel said, you know, he's ready to play in this one, like, I mean, what's he supposed to say? I mean, he's still a freshman. you really put him out there in that kind of situation? Like, I mean, I guess maybe it depends on the circumstance, but, you know, it feels like Squirrel is preparing to be able to play, and that's a good sign for Tennessee. But even then, as we've seen all year, he's one hit or so away from – coming right back out.
What have you guys seen from Nico this year that thinks you guys are – that had you guys thinking that he is prepared for this moment? Josh Hopple continued to say on Monday, he said it several times this year, that his ability to reset and move from one play to the next play, one quarter to the next quarter, has been really, really impressive. I go back to that Vanderbilt game, and I understand it's Vanderbilt, and this is a better Vanderbilt team, but you allow the opening kickoff to return, your All-American running back fumbles, you're down 14-0 in the first 4 minutes of the game. You're facing like third and eight or whatever. He hits that pass, and then later on another third down on that next offensive possession, and it's a touchdown. I thought that he showed the ability to respond in the right way. You know, when things weren't going well, not necessarily for him, but for the team. Rob, what have you seen from Nico that thinks that the moment's not going to be too big, that he can lead the Tennessee offense down there and hopefully has some success early in this football game? And what's going to be a hostile environment on the road in the college football playoffs?
Oh, easy. Georgia. Athens, Georgia. No disrespect to Columbus, but what he's going to see up there, I mean, the pressure might be more, the stakes might be more, but as far as atmosphere, hostile environment, it's not going to be anything more than he saw in Athens, and neither is the challenge from, you know, personnel, talent-wise, that he's going to see from that defense. And, you know, Nico didn't dominate that game, but it wasn't too big for him by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he moved the offense, he moved it from the jump. I mean, 10 points in the first quarter. And, you know, was under pressure all night long, never had a, you know, panic throw, had the late fumble, you know, when it was a two-score game. But to me, just the way he handled things in Athens, I mean, he made plays. He made plays with his legs, kept his eyes downfield when, you know, he was feeling heat all the time. And to me, it doesn't mean he's going to win in Columbus, but to me that means he's not going to shrink from what's going to be just an enormous national spotlight.
a lot of talented playmakers on the other side of the football for Ohio State, and Jeremiah Smith and Ibuka and Carnell Tate and some of these other really talented, Brandon Ines, talented wide receivers. You know, you like the matchup with Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson. But Brent, I feel like this has got to be one of those games to where, and we'll see what Tennessee wants to do defensively. You got to be who you are, but you can't necessarily be married to one scheme. I would, you know, mix it up a little bit. I'd be sending some pressure. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of 4-3 in this football game with Caleb Perry as the third linebacker. I think that you'll see more of your base 4-2-5. But if I'm Tim Banks, I'm kind of mixing things up a little bit, and I'm trying to be who you are, which historically, under this regime, you've been a very aggressive defense. But I say all this because in certain games, you know, Georgia felt like they were kind of simplistic in what they did. Florida last year felt like they were kind of married to what they did. I would be multiple a little bit when times call for it, especially if you're searching for something that's working in this game.
Well, I think it goes back to winning early downs. You know, how are you going to play third down? If it's third and six, how are you playing it versus third and nine, third and 10? I mean, you know, Tennessee's played a lot of zone and third and long situations, kept the ball in front of them and tackled guys before the sticks. We've also seen them, you know, be in man coverage. I mean, you look at that Georgia game, they were out in man coverage. Florida, they played a good bit of man coverage. They played a ton of man coverage against Alabama. I mean, you go back to Ricky Gibson, you know, he got away with a penalty, but I mean, they put him straight up. I mean, he's got Ryan Williams in man coverage when Jermaine McCoy is out of the game and they didn't flinch there. So, yeah, I mean, I think Tim Banks is going to try to heat the quarterback up. I think the question is going to be, how do you adjust? What do you adjust to as the game goes on? And, you know, I think at Georgia, they had a hard time getting to the quarterback. And I think Austin, they probably stayed a little married to their plan a little too long in terms of getting to the quarterback. And, you know, if you're not getting there early, what do you do differently? And how do you adjust on the fly in this game on both sides of the ball with whatever newness that somebody throws at you? How does Tim Banks alter things? If plan B is not working or plan A is not working, what does his plan B look like to get Howard uncomfortable and not let them, you know, get settled in and get in a rhythm?
Yeah, I mean, look at the offense. I mean, at points and times this year, they've really sputtered, especially in the first half. But adjustments have been made, and Tennessee's been able to do some things to have success on the offensive side of the ball in the second half. What adjustments can the defense make? I would tell you that I think Tennessee, you know, needs to at least early on try to get home with their base and see what happens, and then adjust off of that. And I think you can sprinkle in the right blitz or two, even when you are, you know, kind of going with your normal stuff early on. You know, I think the pressure on Will Howard is the key in this game. I really do. I think James Pierce has to play a really good football game. I think Josh Josephs has to play a really good football game. And, you know, when we taped the Rocky Top Roundtable this week, you know, Brent Hubbs, you know, brought up Omar Norman Lott. I think his ability to be a pass rusher from the defensive tackle spot is something that, you know, it can be a real advantage for Tennessee, especially with Ohio State being weaker in the middle. So, you know, I do think you got to find a way to get pressure. Everybody can talk about Howard and his ability to move around. He still doesn't move around like Jalen Milroe. You know, I mean, like this is still much more of a statue, even if he's athletic enough to make plays, than some of the players Tennessee's went against this year, you know, that have been able to do a lot of stuff off platform. He's not a great thrower off platform, in my opinion. I think he wants to be set up. Now, he likes to move around, but as long as he's set up while moving. If he's throwing on the move, he's not nearly as accurate. So I think being able to you know, flush him and push him around, I think it's a big storyline in this game defensively for Tennessee.
Kind of last thing before we move into transfer portal conversation, you know, we'll have our game picks later in the week, of course, and the rest of our game week content. But it feels like this game, anybody you talk to, it's going to be close, right? It's going to be a lower scoring, close. That's kind of what all the predictions are. I looked at CBS Sports, and five of the eight panelists they had actually had Tennessee winning this game. Adam Rittenberg at ESPN has Ohio State winning this game. College Football Network has Ohio State winning this game. But there's been some Tennessee flavor as well, Rob. But, you know, for what kind of game are you expecting? And, you know, outside of what you already said, what does Tennessee need to do to pull off this upset on the road in the CFP?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if it's not low scoring. If either one of these teams gets to 30, I'll be really surprised. But I mean, I mean, it's not fabulous insight, but I mean, go back to what Coach Heupel says a lot, and that's just doing ordinary things at a really high level. And to me, that just means not letting the moment get you out of what you do. You know, be who you are. That's, you know, 2 years ago, I think that team, wasn't ready. You know, when they got to 8-0, they were ranked number one. I think they looked around. They're like, holy crap. You know, there's a lot on the line here. And I think they had to, you know, do something special to, you know, to keep going. And this team, I don't feel like this team feels like they have to do anything special. I think, and to me, that's a long answer, Eric. I think they just got to be who they are. Just, you know, do the things they do, you know, run the football. Don't turn the football over. Stop the run on defense. Get off the field on third down. And just, you know, don't let the moment get them out of what they are. And I don't think they will. And man, I've said it before, but I think Coach Heupel's mentality helps this team a lot in situations like this. Cause I mean, he doesn't shrink from this stuff. He loves it. And you know, same way he was as a player. I mean, he's fired up about the competition, and man, I think that bleeds over to his locker room big time.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. I think, you know, if Tennessee were to go and win on this game on the road, I think you'll look back to that press conference after the Vanderbilt game where Heupel said, any place, anywhere, anytime. Like, he just kind of established the mindset right then and there. He wasn't going to sit around and go, man, we should have a home game. This isn't fair. Like, you know, like he just established, like, hey, we're in the tournament, and that's all we could ask for. Let's go play. Let's go set the ball down and play.
All right, let's shift gears here to the transfer portal. So far, Tennessee, at the time of this recording, has had 8 players enter the transfer portal. Josh Heupel said on Monday that he believes that his roster is set for the college football playoffs, meaning no more departures, at least he doesn't think at this time. And, you know, you got Cam Seldon at running back. You got a trio of receivers in Nathan Laycock, Chaz Nimrod, Caleb Webb. You got another running back in Khalifa Keith, a cornerback in Jordan Matthews, a linebacker in Jalen Smith. Again, none of these guys have been super, super productive for you, but when you look at the depth entering this game, Brent, you know, your fourth linebacker, a guy that plays about 30 or so snaps a game, and Jalen Smith is not going to be there, and Simpson, Edwin Spillman, and then, of course, the slot receiver that we kind of talked about with Chaz Nimrod not being there to back up Squirrel White. Any surprises from this list of 8 players who have entered the portal? And do you think they're going to be okay depth-wise on the road at Ohio State?
Well, I mean, I think it's the Jalen Smith one for me because he's a guy who played a lot this year. You know, how successful was he? You know, what led him to believe that it was time for him to move on? I mean, all those things going on behind the scenes. I mean, I guess nothing surprises us in this day and age. I mean, Austin's talked about this. You know, we did the chat a week or so ago, and Austin's like, look, man, anybody's a possible. I mean, it could happen from your starting quarterback through your third team place kicker. And not that he knew anything, but it was just the reality of anything can happen. So I don't know that anything's surprising. I think when you look at this list, the biggest contributor, the biggest loss for this particular game is Jalen Smith. Now, if Edwin Spillman had been healthy all season long, I don't know what we would be saying about Jalen Smith. If Keenan Peely had stayed healthy all season long, I don't know how much we'd be talking about Jalen Smith, but the reality is he's averaged 26 snaps a game since Keenan Peely got hurt, and he has been their linebacker in passing situations. And now that becomes Edwin Spillman, and we'll see how ready Edwin Spillman is for that moment. If that's the direction they elect to go, I don't think they're going to suddenly jump out there with a dime package, but that's the one biggest concern. The one thing I will have an eye on is how does Ohio State try to attack the middle of the field with Tennessee at the second level with the linebackers? Because to me, that's the biggest potential loss out of this group of guys who have departed for the portal.
None of them are a surprise. I mean, Jalen Smith only because what Hubs just said, but like at the end of the day, Hubs is right. If you know, Edmund doesn't get hurt and if Peely doesn't get hurt, how much does he really play? And if he goes in the portal, you're really not, you know, like, okay, you know, I mean, you know, Edmund just has to, you know, has to hit a crash course here for this game and you know, play a lot more snaps than he's played to this point in his Tennessee career as a true freshman. And a lot of it's against the one team that he picked Tennessee over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I will say this for Jalen Smith. Give him credit. I mean, he stepped up. He played better than I mean, if you'd have told me in the preseason that Edwin Spillman was going to play 30 snaps, Jalen Smith was going to play 30 snaps a game the back half of this season, I probably would have told you Tennessee's defense is having some struggles. But they didn't. He did a nice job for Tennessee. So I don't want to act like he can't play. It's not that. It's just he got thrown into action and ran with it. And as a result of that, we'll see how a more athletic, more talented Edwin Spielman adapts in this crash course here when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and a guy that, like, long-term, you like that option a whole lot better. But, you know, when you're going into the biggest game of the year, a guy that just hadn't played an awful lot just because he's been out with injury. So I'm intrigued to see
what he looks like. Welcome to college football.
Yep.
Welcome to college football.
The new norm, that is for sure. Let's look at incoming guys from the transfer portal. So far, none for Tennessee. And, of course, they can move by a mile a minute. Things can be outdated by the time this goes live. And, you know, we're scheduled to speak with a couple of guys who are leaving campus here later on Monday night. But overall, Austin Price, Tennessee's hosted a couple of guys over the weekend. What can you tell us about? I mean, it's clear the direction right now, it's line of scrimmage, defensive line, offensive line, and that was going to be expected.
Yeah, offensive interior and defensive interior. And Wendell Moy visited with him on Monday morning. As he left campus, he was on campus about a day, and it feels like if he's going to play east of the Mississippi, Tennessee seems to have the most momentum coming out of this visit. Just a little bit more than Auburn, just based off my talk with him. But he's going to take this visit to Washington, and that's where Coach Fish is. You know, it's his former coach at Arizona. You know, he talked about how much the staff loves him and stuff like that. Like, you know, does he come back east or does he stay out west? If he stays out west, it's going to be Washington. If he comes out east, I do like Tennessee's chances, but you're going to have to fend off, you know, this last visit here for a guy who, you know, weighs 340 pounds and does not look 340 pounds at all. I mean, like, I wish I could carry the weight that he carries. I mean, that's what, fantastic looking offensive guard prospect. And so we'll kind of see what he does. But he said he wants to do something later this week, which means that Washington visit's going to be getting on the docket and, you know, going from there.
Obviously hoping to get another, you know, guy in on campus for a visit as the week goes on, maybe more. But, I mean, Tennessee is leaving this weekend, going to be focused on a game. You have, you know, win or loss, you have Christmas next week. So there's a lot of, I don't want to call it distractions, but there's a lot of, like, it's not the easiest time to host guys for the University of Tennessee. What's that schedule kind of look like in terms of when they're going to try to get more guys on campus?
Well, you know, the two defensive linemen, the Suggs kid from LSU and then Thompson from Wisconsin, they left campus on Monday night. And then Josh Thompson, the offensive lineman from Northwestern, he will be here Tuesday and Wednesday, and then leave Wednesday night. And so, that's kind of where we're at right now. No other visitors set up as of this taping on Monday. And Thompson's a guy who was at Ohio State. He's kind of got a lot of different schools to pick from. A kid that, you know, played at a high level at Northwestern, seems to have a lot of interest from, you know, several schools, and kind of we'll see where the things go from here. But it's clear Tennessee is targeting interior offensive line, interior defensive line. And I'm sure that there will be an adjustment off of that, but just not yet with other potential positions.
All right, let me do this. I know we got other things to get to here, but there's not going to be a college football commissioner anytime soon, but I'm going to ask all three of you guys this question. Is there anything they can do to fix what is going on right now? I mean, you got Marshall not playing a bowl game. You got playoff teams. I mean, think about what Tennessee's doing right now. They welcome 20 newcomers into the practice field. In a week, you're getting ready to play your biggest game. You're hosting three or four visitors this weekend. I asked Josh Heupel, is your roster set? Because anybody can go in the portal between now and the time that the plane leaves on Friday to go to a playoff game. Same thing with any bowl team out there. Is there any way to fix this? And how much of this does the Marshall thing get anybody's attention enough to say, hey, we got a real problem here? Or does this remain, deal with it?
If it was, what was it a couple years ago? It was A&M that didn't have a quarterback, right? Is that right? Or was it LSU? I think from the SEC essentially didn't have a quarterback in the bowl game. Now it wasn't college football playoff. Yeah, but maybe if it was a bigger team, maybe. But I don't think it's going to get anybody's attention that it's Marshall, at least right now, unless that number grows. Austin, I mean, we talked about signing day, you know, putting it up to August and then keeping the one in February, but that just takes one little small fraction of this whole mess, and that's honestly like the least of the distractions right now. I mean, in terms of having to be enrolled in school by January when classes starts, with the expansion of the college football playoffs when it's with it starting this weekend and going all the way up to January the 20th, I don't have a solution in terms of trying to lessen the load a little bit outside of just moving signing day, which is just a small little fraction of it.
I would like them to take the teams that are still playing and change the window. Like, but the problem is you're going to have somebody sue and they don't have a real reason why they can't do this. And that's why, like, it's kind of like the whole fifth year thing. Like, there's that whole talk of like, they're just going to be saying, all right, everybody gets 5 years to play. Everybody gets 5 years, no more red shirts. Everybody gets 5 years to play. The moment that happens, anybody that's sitting there that has played 4 years ago go, well, wait a minute, what about me? I can play next year. That's 5 years. And then they'll go sue, they'll go win. Like, you know, like they can't ever win a court case to kind of slow the roll on any of this stuff. I'm just not sure what they can do to fix it, Brent. Like, to me, there's some tweaks they could make, but the problem is there's a domino effect the other direction when you try to tweak things, and I'm not sure that they can just, you know, squash it or win any type of court case to lock some of this stuff in.
Yeah, I don't know how to fix, like, this calendar we're in right now where you have, you know, kids on playoff teams leaving, but I mean, do you guys not agree that the transfer stuff, I mean, this the mass transfer stuff is not going to end or get any better until there's like some legal contracts between whether it's the kids and schools or kids and collectives, where there's some kind of financial penalty for moving around, like you give something back or you know, the contracts for 2 years. I mean, I am all for kid being able to transfer and move around 100%, but the wild, wild west is bad.
I think the best thing to do, Rob, would be to get everybody on board with the whole sham of NIL. Like, just call it pay for play.
Oh, 100%. That goes without saying
that would get you locked in more, because right now it's kind of the whole name, image, and likeness. And, you know, if a kid leaves, the collective can kind of get out of the deal and vice versa. You know,
But you can't say the kid's got to play 12 or 13 games or X number of games to fulfill his obligation.
Could be like the NFL, like, you know, you don't change teams until after the season. The problem is you have an academic semester that starts, that all this kind of overlaps with one another.
Well, here's my question, and this is why I asked this, because I don't know, I don't think this is necessarily the right answer. Look, a lot of schools start their spring semester sometime between January the 5th and January the 12th, and then Tennessee starts really late. They're January 24th. 1st, 22nd, somewhere in that window, something 24th, like that. 24th, whatever it is. My question is, could you open the portal, reduce the window size, and do the 2nd through the 14th of January? And anybody that starts school on January the 6th, they could still get them in on a drop ad deal, right? You could still get somebody in school. So could you do a 2-week window after, where the only teams left playing the four teams left, much like you got college basketball in the Final Four, that window opens before you get to the Final Four. Is that something that needs to be looked at? And the reason I ask that is, look at the number of guys who went in the portal and 48 hours later, they were committed to another school because they knew where they were going when they went in the portal anyway. Yes, some of them take 4 or 5 visits because they're shopping for the best deal. But a lot of guys take 1 or 2 visits or no visits because they already know where they're going. Do we need 3 weeks in December for the portal window, or could you do it in 2 weeks right at the start of January and still make your academic requirements for school? That's the one window, the one tweak that I wonder if that's even a remote possibility for discussion at this point. If I'm a chancellor, I don't know that I have a problem with that. I mean, I really don't. I mean, so they start school 5 days after school started.
Yeah, that's not a big deal. Chances they're going to all 5 of those classes anyway, right?
I mean, you know, I mean, it's – so I just wonder if that's something that they look at to limit this notion of, all right, you know, bowl games that cancels, you know, maybe that would prevent canceling bowl games. You'd still have opt-outs, I'm sure, but does that make life easier? Is that a little bit of a balance for coaches? Now, that's typically a dead period for coaches. You know, but do we need to tweak that part of it and take some of the pressure off of the month of December?
I guess the question would be, from the NCAA's perspective, do you want to set that precedent, essentially saying that I don't think it is, but saying like, oh, who cares about school, right? It's like, oh, well, they're not going to be there for classes to start, even though you're still getting in there before the end, which, again, I don't have a problem with. You know, it is what it is, but I that's the only thing I can kind of think of, because I think that window makes sense.
But I mean, doesn't all the teams have a 5-day? Doesn't the playoff teams have a 5-day window after they get eliminated?
Mm-hmm. Every team does. Yes.
So
every team playing after the 28th.
If you play in a championship game on the 20th of January, there's a 5-day window to transfer.
Yep.
So if it's a really good player, do we think they might have a waiver to get him in school for the spring semester somewhere?
Yeah, I would assume so.
if not, then somebody like Tennessee who starts late is all of a sudden, you know, much more attractive.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that a team that starts earlier, like let's say Oregon is playing in the deal, or Ohio State's playing in the championship, and there's a quarterback available off of one of the teams, or there's a running back available off of one of the teams, you know, and you got a 5-day window. I just think that there's a possibility that you can make that work, because I think what you're doing right now doesn't work, and maybe it's because Tennessee's in the playoff and you're seeing it more up close and personal than you do from being just a bowl team, which is essentially an exhibition game or a scrimmage against another team. So maybe it feels different, but boy, the calendar just feels the signing day stuff is a non-factor here. It's to me, it's all about, what do you do with this transfer portal window in December? Can you do anything about it? And I don't know that that's an answer. I just wonder aloud.
Yeah, I'm just not sure they can do anything.
Maybe they can't.
I mean, look at Texas last year. It's a different situation now because Arch has played, and you kind of know what Arch is a part of the game plan now a little bit. But, you know, Murphy, the quarterback, left Texas heading into the 14 playoff last year. He had a true freshman that hadn't played hardly any. And Arch Manning, if anything happened to your starter, I mean, he was going to go in. I mean, you just don't want to be in that situation, or in a situation where you have to play somebody and you're actually competing for a national championship that, you know, isn't ready or something. So I don't know. We'll have to see. It's a new era in college football, no doubt about it. It's a busy time. And of course, it's a busy time for Tennessee, getting ready for the college football playoffs. But we're going to shift gears and go and talk a little Tennessee hoops. What a win in Champaign over the weekend. The number one ranked Volunteers. We'll discuss that and so much more with the buzzer beater when we come back here on the VolQuest podcast.
Hey, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterl, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Hey, as always, a big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Exterior Home Solutions, local and trusted since 1999. I do want to take a time right now to remind you guys, the college football playoff week got a sale going on at VolQuest.com, $1 for 7 days. Don't want to miss any of the coverage for Tennessee, Ohio State leading into kickoff. During the game, we'll be there in Columbus at the Shoe and getting you set for the next play, and of course, all the reaction post-game from Columbus, Ohio, and everything in between with the transfer portal notes and recruiting and all that and more. What a deal to get started with this. If you're listening to us, we thank you. If you're watching us, we thank you, but not a member of the site. Take advantage of this deal right now. See if you like it, and see if you like our family over the General's Quarters. $1 for 7 days, VolQuest.com.
Hey, this is Travis Thompson, one of the new owners at North Lake Boat Store in La Follette, Tennessee. Love to have you come up and check out our Christmas sale. We have 50% off on all of our stuff in the pro shop. We carry Ranger, Starcraft. You can find us online at NorthStateBoatStore.com or on Facebook at North Lake Boat Store. Happy holidays.
All right, Tennessee, a 66-64 win over Illinois. Nice quad one win on the road. Illinois is not ranked, but that's a really, really nice win. And it was a game where, Rob, Tennessee obviously didn't play its best offensively. It was a hard-nosed basketball game, defense, a lot of fouling. Tennessee, let's see, it was Illinois that made more free throws than Tennessee attempted, and Tennessee attempted 28. So that just kind of tells you all about this game that you need to know. Star players fouled out in Zakai Ziegler and Chaz Lanier. Felix Akpara played 8 minutes. Mayshak had 4 fouls. It was Jordan Gainey that stepped up, and made the coast-to-coast layup there to win it for Tennessee at the buzzer. Just all in all, a really solid win by a really solid basketball team.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to overstate kind of, you know, how impressive I thought they were, Eric. You say Illinois is not ranked, but I think that's a really good team. Mm-hmm. Two losses, you know, one was not at Alabama, might as well have been. It was in Birmingham. They lost 180-87 in a track meet, and then lost their conference opener at Northwestern in a game, you know, road game in conference. But that's a really good team that I'll be surprised if they're not one of the top three or four teams in the Big Ten before the year's end. And that was obviously a hostile arena. I mean, that was Tennessee's best win of the year. It's not even close. And you mentioned the foul trouble to do what they did the second half. With Zakai played 6 minutes in the second half, and Chaz wasn't limited that much in minutes. I mean, he eventually fouled out, but still was 1 of 7 from the floor. I mean, you know, your leading scorer just didn't have it.
Rob, tell us that stat that you had. Sorry to cut in. Tell us that stat you had in the second half was Zakai playing 6 minutes.
Yeah, they had zero turnovers in 20 minutes at Illinois. In a game like that, you know, that was a war. I mean, both ways. I mean, two really tough physical defensive teams. And to have no turnovers when your senior point guard is on the bench in that game and, you know, not waste possessions, that was just a really tough those games. I thought the best thing to say, you know, Tennessee this year, they're flashier. They're sexier. They score more. But, you know, that game reminded you that when they need to get down in the mud and, you know, roll up their sleeves and win a bare-knuckle fight, they can do it. And that was just a big-time win.
For me, Rob, I don't think they could have won that game a year ago had Dalton Connect, their best player, fouled out.
Oh, God, no. No, no.
I love their pieces around it. I mean, Milicic was 0 of 8 from 3. And that last one was just – I mean, it was almost like it was in his head, right? Like, I mean – incredibly lucky that, you know, the ball went to Mayshak there and he got fouled. But, I mean, this is a team that just – I love their pieces around. Now, I do worry about their depth. And, you know, like, when can Cam Carr get back? Can they find any kind of warm body at midterm? I know that there's been some talk of that. Then all of a sudden that kind of got, you know, shot down a little bit. But, I mean, to me, like, you need something because, like – you're going to have another game where you get into foul trouble. That's just how basketball works. And, like, you know, they're just painfully thin on the front line. And, you know, I just feel like they need one more body, even if it's somebody that comes in and gives them 5 minutes a game, just to have somebody competent in case you have another game like this one.
Where would you have been if Dubar would still had a concussion? I mean, you know, like
you'd be 9-1 for sure is where you'd be. I mean, and that's a guy that, you know, a month ago, and this is no knock on the kid. I'm not saying anything bad about him because, I mean, he was really, you know, struggling, going through some stuff. But, I mean, I don't think the staff could have told you for sure, you know, that he was going to give him anything this year. And, you know, he was he wasn't doing anything wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he was really, all the, you know, going through some personal stuff. And, you know, he got all the support he needed here. But it was a real question of what, you know, what he was going to give him. And you're right, Eric. I mean, if he's not there, that's a loss. And, AP, they do need Cam Carr back. I mean, big time. I mean, he's a guy that can really be a spark off the bench offensively. And they could, you know, Jordan Ganey saved him the other day, but Cam can do some real similar things. And bottom line, Okpara he can't have games like that against good teams. I mean, they got by the other day. I mean, I don't know if you really, I mean, played almost the whole second half with Milicic at the five and Jamai, you know, at the four, or vice versa, you know, switching, you know, Jamai switching on to and guarding this guarding fives. And, you know, as far as he can't no show like he did against good teams.
But I mean, that's at some point that's going to happen. Like, that's just basketball. Like, you just get a couple of officials that get a quick whistle and boom, boom, boom. I mean, you end up like Zakai was there the first 2 minutes of the second half.
And that was incredible. Another thing about even with Okpara just not being a factor, you know, even defensively, Illinois' leading scorer was the big guy, Tomasov, and he was averaging right at 16 a game. He had 4 points, 1 of 5 shooting, and that was with, you know, your defensive rim protector, you know, just again being a non-factor. Just a tough nose, big time win. That win is going to look better and better as the season goes on.
Well, we were talking earlier in the week, you know, Igor, of course, didn't have a great game shooting, but he played one other game in his career, you know, at his previous stop, where it was like double or triple overtime or whatever. He played over 40 minutes, but you can't live to Austin's point, you can't live with him playing 36 minutes a game, but you can win a game here and there, and Tennessee did. But Igor played 37 minutes, essentially, and he had 14 rebounds, had a really good rebounding first half as well. Good to see him giving them something, obviously a lot of minutes, but obviously big on the board, is even when he was nowhere to be found on the offensive end.
Oh, yeah, and that says a lot about his mindset, too. I mean, coach, you know, the staff loves his mindset. I mean, he definitely fits the culture here, but, you know, a lot of guys, they go 2 of 14 from the field, you know, that's in their head. I mean, they're a non-factor, and that wasn't the case with him. I mean, that's, again, talked about Illinois' leading scorer had 4 points in that game. Big part of that was Igor, you know, doing the heavy lifting in the paint, and how big is the play he made, you know, still in the inbounds pass, going down court for the dunk, you know, breaking a tie game in the last 2 minutes. I mean, that was enormous.
You think about, like, who you want the ball in their hands at the end of the game to go, you know, make a shot, game-winning shot, game-tying shot, whatever. You got Chaz Lanier, you know, Zakai. Igor's in that conversation, not the other night, but he's in that conversation. You know, Gainey, again, not just the last, you know, coast-to-coast buzzer beater, but for him to come up and play 35 minutes off the bench, score 23 points. He was 8 of 9 from the charity stripe. He shot nearly 50% from the field. I think you said it earlier. I mean, he saved Tennessee. And to have that luxury, and he's a guy that's been in the system for a while, but to have that luxury off the bench, not only to give you something every single game, but to come and save you in a game like this. I mean, I can't say enough about Gainey's performance the other night, and obviously, you know, he deserves all the praise that he got from Rick Barnes afterwards. What a game for him.
Oh, yes. I mean, stepped up big time. I mean, this, you know, two, you say he scored 18 points, and that sounds like a lot. It was, but in addition to that, to the buzzer beater, EC, you mentioned, he had some huge shots. He had two big threes, one that, you know, tied the game at 64. Another one, you know, after Tennessee had fallen behind by 6 there, when him and Darren Stone hit two back-to-back that tied it up. And just some big shots. And he does it on both ends of the floor, too. I mean, that's he's an underrated part of why this team is so good right now.
And they just brother-in-lawed it the other night. That's
yeah, and I mean, AP, you know, what you're, I'm sorry, I'm stepping on your point. But they did brother-in-law it, because if you're only playing 7 or 8 guys, you got to get something out of all 7 or 8 guys.
Yep. And I mean, look at the other night. I mean, you know, Igor – you know, look like me shooting threes, and but what does he do there late? He comes, he anticipates, he takes the lazy pass by on the inbounds, takes it in for the dunk. That was a huge play in the game, a huge play in the game. Then the guy was a force on the boards. You know, so I mean, like, everybody just kind of did little things here and there, and it all equated up to Tennessee overcoming, you know, poor officiating and all that foul trouble to get a big win on the road.
Hey, last thing I want to ask you, Rob, at least for me, and AP, you know, go I'm more done. If you have any more. Bishop Boswell, there was a stretch there where Tennessee absolutely needed him. He came in and played like 4 or 5 minutes in a row or whatever. Looked like he's got a lot to learn. I'm sure Rick Barnes will pick apart his performance, but I mean, it looked like he kind of belonged there, and that was obviously great to see from a guy who's not in the normal rotation, your true freshman, in that environment, come in and give you almost 7 minutes.
Yeah, and he didn't look overwhelmed. I mean, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't playing hot potato with the basketball. You know, he knew what to do defensively. He had 3 rebounds. He was part of that, you know, having no turnovers in the second half. And, you know, I think that says a lot about Bishop. When, you know, you come in as a, you know, he wasn't like a McDonald's All-American. Bishop's a top 50 national player, could have gone a lot of places. And, you know, he's not playing much, but that tells you a lot about him. I mean, he was ready. I mean, he wasn't lost when he came in there. And I'm not mentioning any names, but, you know, there's been a lot of freshmen that have come through here in the not-so-recent past who didn't play, who didn't get the minutes they thought they would get early, who didn't practice hard, who didn't pay attention to film, who didn't, you know, pay attention to the scout. And they never played, and they're not here anymore. You know, Bishop is an example of a guy who might be playing 2 or 3 minutes a game, but he works at it, and when his number's called, he's ready.
Very comparable to how we kind of described Jalen Smith against NC State. You know, it was Edwin Spillman was not playing in that game. Caleb Perry, a late scratch because he was sick. Jalen Smith stepped in and played like 25 snaps in that game, which at the time was a really, really big game because everybody thought NC State was going to be great. And just didn't look like he missed a beat and kind of prepared him later on in the season. And who knows, if Tennessee will need Bishop Boswell later in this year. But of course the lights won't be too bright for him. Got the Catamounts coming up later tonight. At
big game.
Thompson
big game. Easy.
What's that?
Big game.
Big game. Big game at the Food City Center. And then of course a little bit of break. And then you've got a game after the 27th, I believe. And then SEC plays right around the corner, right?
right around the corner, Arkansas. I believe it's January 4th, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that one here or there?
It is here. Okay. Welcome, Cal, back to Knoxville in that red blazer.
Jonas Adu.
And Jonas, yeah.
A lot going on at VolQuest.com, the number one ranked Tennessee basketball team. Tennessee baseball is about to start here in a couple of months. You got Tennessee football in the college football playoffs. Recruiting never stops. Transfer portal. No better time to link up with us right now over at VolQuest.com. By joining the site, signing up, you'll get a coverage for 7 days at only $1. $1 for 7 days at VolQuest.com. Continual coverage and nuggets over on the General's Quarters. And as always, do want to thank our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor here of the VolQuest podcast. 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted for 25 years, since 1999. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Rob Lewis, I am Eric Kane. Big thank you as always for joining us here on the VolQuest podcast. You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.